other. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
All men 18 to 44, well, now the U.S. Code 18 to 49, are members of the militia. And I believe all able-bodied men should own rifles, handgun, firearms, like they've always done in the Netherlands. Now they're restricting that. Switzerland, and of course, where we adopted their models, really out of the Dutch founding New York. That was one of the biggest cultural histories that the founders drew on. And of course, it was part of the culture of the colonies before that, that the men, and the women for that matter, be armed to protect their counties, their cities, their towns, their hamlets. But now we've seen a demonization of the Second Amendment culture, where if you try to put a rifle in a rifle rack, even in Wyoming or Texas, cops will pull you over. Nine times out of ten, run up and a lot of times point guns at you, pull you out on the ground, put you down. Because the public sees a gun, they panic. Oh my gosh, there's a slave with a gun. The TV dramas are almost all based in Chicago and New York. All these different TV programs, fiction. They show people being busted with guns and handguns and rifles in their houses or cars. They're always a criminal. So the message is, you're a criminal. You know, they always have drugs or something with it. You have drugs. You are a child molester. You are a cop killer if you own a gun. It's programming. And the message that guns are illegal to begin with. And a caller called in with an example of, you know, NFL on Sunday on Fox, and they were even having anti-gun messages in there. And I pulled it up. Sure enough, last night it was there. Demonizing, oh, these football players were always getting caught with guns. They're wealthy. So what? They've got something to protect. So what? The point is, and maybe even some of them are gang members and thuggish, don't take my rights because of them. But for those of you that don't want to go join one of the active militias, and I will tell you it's dangerous because they're infiltrated with feds, they try to provocateur you, never be around anybody who says, we ought to carry out an attack, we ought to get violent, we ought to do this. They'll wait till you're having a beer or something after you've been training. That's a Fed, folks. They're normally the leader. They'll even found groups to do this, and I've seen a lot of folks go to prison. Don't be the best thing to do is say, hey, we're a local shooter club. We're a neighborhood defense deal. You know, we're just training for the defense of our homes. We're a gunsmith club, and we like to go out and train. It's exercise. And then anybody that comes in and calls for violence, just go to their car, say, get out of here, write down their plates, get in your car, follow them. It's a Fed, or it's a local state police operative. And then you go and you call the media. You call the news. This is how we counterstrike them. You call the media. If the media doesn't cover it, you go on Access TV. You call them to talk radio shows. And you say, hey, this cop came, he tried to get me to do violence. And there's lots of counter stings happening all over the country. It's very, very exciting. That's one of the things that really made him go for the militias in the early 1990s. Remember in Alabama, it was a good old boy roundup with more than 5,000 FBI BATF. They were selling inward hunting licenses and hanging blacks in effigy. Remember that went on 60 Minutes? Boy, they went for the militia hardcore after that. So there's a lot we can do to them as well. So this is the model. Anybody that tells you, militia, it's secret, meet me to dig up guns, meet me, do some covert ops, it's a Fed, folks, or it's a schizophrenic, mentally unstable. We're the good guys. We're the patriots. We're out in the open. It's our Second Amendment, and we have to bring our guns out in public, show everybody, bring our culture back, not let them act like it's some porno movie you bought on the side of the highway at some shop that you put in a black bag and sneak out to your car with. They have made gun owners get in the closet while the globalist and their tyranny and their social engineering is out of the closet, pushing us around, telling us what to do. So we're going to talk about the history of the founding fathers, the history of this nation, Revolutionary War stories to relearn who we are, where we come from. Then we're going to get into the Appleseed project at appleseedinfo.org and a really good cutting-edge group that'll keep you out of the jailhouse where you can still defend the Second Amendment.
Silver is mankind's oldest natural antibiotic. This very special mineral has been used for centuries by most cultures throughout the world. Utopia, Texas is home to a small but mighty supplement company called Utopia Silver, who offers colloidal products produced in distilled water without use of animal protein, nitrates, or saline solutions. Because our colloidal silver is made up of nano-sized particles, it can be better utilized at the cellular level, and germs can't mutate to be resistant like they can to modern-day antibiotics. Utopia Silver has a broad range of health supplements, including colloidal silver, gold, and copper, with a money-back guarantee on the colloidal products we produce. For 4 years, Utopia Silver has been fighting in the Texas courts against agencies that would steal our God-given rights of health care and freedom of speech. Visit us today at utopiasilver.com. That's UTOPIA silver.com. Or call 888-213-4338, 888-213-4338, and help us win this battle.
May I have everybody's attention, please? I've come with a message of information. 9/11 was an inside job.
Do you like being a puppet, sir? Do you like being a puppet for the New World Order?
How do the American people know that 9/11 was a stage, was engineered by you, David Rockefeller, the Trilateral Commission, the CFR?
The day that we stop asking questions is the day that we have allowed the seeds of despotism to grow at our own door.
7 years after the attacks of September 11th, a global awakening has taken place.
An inside job? How dare you?
If you know that there's treason going on, you can be held accountable for treason yourself.
All hell is breaking loose on 6th Avenue.
And if the government has not told the truth, in 5 years we will be here on the 10th anniversary of
that. Truth Rising. Download the film at PrisonPlanet.tv right now, or get the DVD at InfoWars.com. It's now time to take the revolution to the next level.
Now that the election is over and the shock is beginning to wear off, Ready Reserve Foods, in an effort to get as many Americans prepared for the promised changes of a new administration and to help you and your family survive the global economic crash, Ready Reserve is offering the pre-inauguration special. Between now and January 20th, 2009, all food units U1 through U7 are being offered at wholesale prices. That's a 33% savings. A year's supply of meals starts as low as 73 cents per meal. Ready Reserve Food offers only the highest quality dehydrated food, packed in double enameled cans in an inert nitrogen atmosphere, allowing a 15-plus year shelf life. Ready Reserve has been manufacturing since 1972, giving them the freedom to offer you amazing savings. Great-tasting Ready Reserve foods at wholesale prices. Order now at ReadyReserveFoods.com or call today, 1-800-453-2202. That's 1-800-453-2202.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
I've got some big breaking news that just developed here in the office, but we're going to cover it after this current guest leaves us in about an hour and 20 minutes from now, so stay tuned for that. Sam Damewood, I heard him on Derry Brownfield a few weeks ago and really wanted to get him on. 26-year active duty military veteran from Erie, Pennsylvania, gunsmith, lifelong student of American history, and a crack rifleman, currently living in Alamogordo, New Mexico. And we're going to talk about constitutional history, the militias, and this Appleseed movement that's got tens of thousands of people out training to be riflemen, to try to bring life back to the true heritage of a country that is a gun culture to its very core. Remember a few years ago, a head professor up in Chicago wrote a book saying that it was an anti-gun culture and 99% didn't own guns. He was kicked off. He lost his tenure. It turned out he lied. He falsified everything. Well, we already knew that. The point is, they are attacking this culture. They say you're evil, you're bad, you're a redneck, that it's a false appendage, all of this stuff if you want to own a gun. No, we want to be sovereign. We don't want to be slaves. We don't want to be like China and Russia and other countries in Mexico where they've been disarmed and made to be slaves. The Second Amendment is the key, and the dual key is the First Amendment. All of these are under attack. And so we'll also talk about appleseedinfo.org. The Appleseed Project as well, and take your phone calls coming up in about 45 minutes. But I want to talk first at length to our guest, because I've probably read, I don't know, 15, 20 big books on Revolutionary War itself, quite a few books on the pre-war. I read Alexander de Tocqueville's book that came out about 10 years after the war, you know, where he went around the colonies, now the United States, and was just amazed by the ingenuity, the intelligence, the educational level of folks living in log cabins. They're just the most amazing people he'd ever seen. He'd been all over Europe. And then how we've turned into what we are now, how we get back what we were, this incredible heritage, and then go forward from there. So it's really great to have Sam Damewood. Alma, Sam, it is wonderful to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Alex. I appreciate you inviting me on your show today.
For folks that don't know who you are, a little bit more about yourself and then how you got involved in Appleseed, what it is briefly, and then we're going to get into what this country really is about.
Well, Alex, I'm really just an ordinary person here in America. I was born in the late 50s, grew up with all of the fine American values that we had in the 60s, was taught to be a decent human being by my parents, joined the military. I spent most of my adult life with them. When I retired, I came out into gunsmithing. And a couple of years ago, a friend of mine put me onto the Appleseed people. He said, this is something you really need to get into. And I looked at them, checked them out. I went and participated in an Appleseed shoot. And I said, these people have something that I really need to be part of. They've got the message. They know where America's from. They have those values that we all appreciated and that we grew up hearing about when we were children. And that's how I got involved with Appleseed, and it just took off from there.
And you're an instructor with Appleseed now.
Yeah.
Break it down for folks what this country's really about and why the globalists want to remove our heritage. Let's break it down.
Well, I'm not really sure why the globalists want to remove it, but over the past 200 years, we've deviated a lot from the principles that we've read about from our founding fathers, and Appleseed just put me back on track. It just told me where I needed to go to get back with those values and those things that our country was founded on, our love for freedom. And I believe there are people in the world that just can't deal with freedom. Here in America, we're founded on freedom, and Appleseed's the best way I've seen to maintain it. So I stuck with them.
Briefly describe Appleseed, and then let's get into some of those great stories you were telling, many of which I was familiar with, but I love the way you were telling them. Let's spend some time on the spirit of the rifleman, you know, 70-plus-year-old men fighting the redcoats. I mean, people need to hear that.
Sure. You know, in Appleseed, we introduce to our shooters a lot of the history that went with Lexington and Concord and the background behind them so that they can appreciate what it took for our founding fathers to break away from England. And in amongst the shooting instruction, we tell the story of what we call the three strikes, what started the Revolutionary War and how it got going. We offer very good shooting instruction in the process, but when people are listening to the history, it brings tears to their eyes because the older people are familiar with it and the youngsters have never heard it. It's not taught in the schools today. We teach the nation's heritage as riflemen, how the people planned to take care of themselves. They were self-reliant in those days and looked out for each other. They just wanted freedom, and they planned for it, and they carried it out. And Appleseed brings back that heritage as a nation of riflemen to America and introduces people to the history of the founding and how we got going. And I guess we really should start with back at Lexington and Concord, like we like to teach it in Appleseed. On the 18th of April of 1775, General Gage was the British commander in Boston. And the cities of Boston and New York had been occupied by the British military for almost 10 years at that point. In retaliation for actions we'd taken against the First Stamp Act in 1763. The people rebelled against it. They felt that they were being unfairly taxed for a purpose that they didn't care for. They weren't consulted in it. And Parliament had never before tried to control the colony or tax them. With the mounting debt that big government will always bring, the Parliament was in huge debt from the French, from the Seven Years' War, French and Indian War, as we call it, and they wanted to recoup that, so they passed the Stamp Act and the Revenue Act to try and raise money to pay that off. The colonies objected. They objected so strongly that the British sent in over 10,000 troops to occupy the country. And when we refused to pay to quarter those troops, they sent in more. Occupied New York specifically to punish them. Along with those taxes, they started passing what were known as writs of assistance, which were general search warrants that allowed the British to search anywhere they wanted for contraband that had been smuggled in violation of those taxes. And Americans were pretty creative as smugglers in those days, as some of them still are, and the British just couldn't keep up with it in any way, shape, or form. As the British government became more and more oppressive to America, the colonists took action to protect themselves. And they formed committees of correspondence to pass information back and forth between the colonies so that everyone could keep abreast of the latest news, what oppressions and evils were being done. One of the people that we hear a lot about, Paul Revere, was primarily a messenger for the Committee of Correspondence of Massachusetts Colony. And he was widely respected and known to people all over the nation, because he carried the messages back and forth. He made a series of journeys south carrying news from the committees of correspondence. As the oppression became more and more intolerable, the people knew that they were going to have issues. The British had taken the government of Massachusetts Colony and thrown it out. They said, you no longer have the right to govern yourself. We'll appoint the courts, we'll appoint the representatives, we'll tell you everything to do. The people of Massachusetts were very brilliant. They ignored the British. When the British tried to have a court sit, people didn't come for jury duty. When the British tried to have an assembly and vote on things, get things done, people ignored what they said and did. They held their own town meetings and continued to rule themselves. And the British were highly intolerant of that. And as things came to a head in late 1774, the British started to become more and more aggressive in trying to control the colonists.
Now, let's stop there. We're going to break in a moment and come back and go through this. But as you list what you're listing, it was later put in the Declaration of Independence, they've now announced NORTHCOM, 20,000 troops for the streets of America, for civil insurrection, that the governors will serve at the pleasure of the president as dual-hatted military officers, same thing the British did. We've created all these new courts, family courts, federal bureaucracies, regional courts that aren't even real courts, they're tribunals. All the same forms of tyranny are now being used. The blank FISA warrants, that's not even good enough for them. Now they just don't have warrants. They're using the Patriot Act in non-terror-related cases. So we see literally a mirror image and quartering of troops. That also meant troops in the streets, troops at checkpoints, at street corners. Now we're hearing this is happening, and I had a judge advocate colonel on last week who's a Republican saying this is horrible. It's all over the news that what we're hearing is totally illegal. So we see a dovetailing here with what our founders went through and what we're going through. And the good news here is they were occupied, as you say, for more than a decade before they finally physically fought back. So, folks, this is going to be a long, hard fight, and that's separate from Appleseed and the rest of it. The point is that it was the publishers, many of them, many of the founding fathers were publishers, and they finally tried to stop them publishing their newspapers, so they'd go underground. Then they would arrest them. Then the people would rebel, seeing that tyranny. We're going to go through the same thing. A lot of us won't make it through this, but in the end, the Republic will be restored. We'll be right back with our guests. Stay with us.
signs are clear.
The worldwide economic collapse is here.
The military is being positioned for martial law.
The mark of the beast is at hand.
Governments are calling for a new world cashless economic system.
Having a long-term food solution is your only hope.
To stay free.
Now, Survival of Seeds introduces their Escape the Beast Kit. 24 varieties of all-natural, non-genetically modified heirloom seeds.
For true patriots and homesteaders wanting food insurance.
That's over 5 pounds of rare historic seeds.
For a penny per seed.
15,000 seeds that will feed a family healthy food for 7 years.
Big John Lipska, host of Don't Tread on Me, is including an instructional DVD that will teach you how to earn big money selling the produce from his incredible heirloom seeds back to him, restaurants, and small delis. Don't buy from copycats. Their fancy packaging is not free.
Order today before it's too late. SurvivalistSeeds.com.
That's SurvivalistSeeds.com.
A long-term food solution.
A day unlike any other in the long course of American history, a terrorist act of war against this country.
The enemy struck America on September 11th. But who is the enemy?
Bin Laden.
This is his M.O.
We have to look to the Middle East. We have to look to Osama bin Laden.
Fabled Enemies is the first 9/11 film to take a close look at the terrorist ties to intelligence networks inside the United States.
Some U.S. investigators believe that there are Israelis again very much engaged in spying in and on the U.S.
I'm aware that some Israeli citizens have been detained.
Bin Laden's connections to the CIA, the hijackers' ties to the FBI, the Saudi Arabian connection, the Israeli intelligence network, warnings and war games, the shadow government, and much, much more. Fabled Enemies. Get the DVD at Infowars.com or see it in super high quality, along with hundreds of other titles at PrisonPlanet.tv.
Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists.
Hi, John Huebner from Midas Resources. Are you tired of watching your hard-earned assets dwindle away? As government spending is out of hand and the Federal Reserve is creating in excess of $20 billion a week, are you tired of stockbrokers gambling away your hard-earned money? Is this market a setup for a crash greater than 1987? Too many of today's policies resemble those that led to the collapse of 1929. How much are you willing to lose? Take action now. Call me at 1-800-686-2237, extension 129. I believe that we are facing a financial catastrophe of biblical proportion. Over recent decades, numerous economic systems have failed. Current Federal Reserve policy and uncontrolled government spending have set the stage for the United States to be the next target. Secure your assets today by calling 1-800-686-2237, extension 129. Do this while paper can still buy gold. Call me, John Huebner, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 129.
How many times have you been in the dark looking for a flashlight, only to find the one that you have is broken, the batteries are dead, or it's just not bright enough? You need the Packlight. The Packlight is the longest-lasting flashlight on the market and simply snaps onto any 9-volt battery and uses 2 high-powered LED lights. It's small enough to carry in your pocket, car, garage, and home. The Packlight can survive severe impact, be frozen solid, and still work flawlessly. The Packlight is so durable, soldiers overseas rely on them and has been featured in the New York Times and Backpacker magazine. The Packlight comes with a 25-year warranty and prices start at just $12.99. To learn more and see for yourself just how incredible this small flashlight can be, visit 9voltlight.com. That address again is 9voltlight.com. Or call us today at 877-715-4448. That's 877-715-4448.
Can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down.
Sam Damewood is our guest.
Go tell that long tongue liar.
Good to have you with us today. Do you want to comment on what I said as we went into break about similar tyrannies today, or do you want to move forward into 1775?
Yes, Alex, obviously, in response to that government oppression, the colonists felt a need to prepare. They prepared in many ways. They developed their own information networks with the committees of correspondence, and they paid attention to what was going on with the government. They created several organizations. There were seven or eight in Boston alone. And it's remarkable that of all of those lists, of the main ones, there were only two people that were on more than three of those lists of organizations. One of them was Paul Revere, who we all know from his famous ride, which the poets have sort of misrepresented to us, but in their preparation, they had decided they needed to arm. And they had maintained stocks of arms all throughout the colony. Lexington and Concord had them. And the very first action that was taken by the British government was something called the powder alarms in our history, where the British went and attempted to remove the stocks of gunpowder from the colonists. The colonists took this as a signal that the government was taking action against them, and they stepped up their training and organization. Now, there had always been a militia in the colony. People needed to band together to protect themselves first from the depredations of Indians and criminals, and from the French during the French and Indian War. But the militia, as many people know it, is an incorrect picture. It's a body of many kinds of citizens, but not minutemen, like we all like to think of. There were, in fact, minutemen, and the colony of Massachusetts had agreed that they should field some companies of minutemen who were a quick response force. But there were two other bands that were very important in this entire process. One of them was called the Alarm Band. And the Alarm Band were the people that sounded the alarm when danger was detected. Paul Revere was one of the people that passed that information to them. And we think of Paul Revere running off alone to tell the world, but there were actually a whole group of supporters that helped him in this endeavor. We had spies in the British Army keeping track of them. And it was through one of those spies that we learned that the British were going to be coming up to Lexington and Concord to seize weapons.
And they routinely would kill, they would hang those spies. This was also very, very dangerous.
Yes, it was. What was unusual in this, and like most spies, it's hard to tell who they really are, but it appears that the spy in the enemy camp for us on April 18th was a woman named Margaret Kemble Gage, who was the wife of the British General Gage, the commander in Boston. She was a good American lady from New York and had trouble with divided loyalties. She wanted America to succeed and prosper on its own without British intervention. And as far as we know, she's the person that told us that they were coming. So the word went out through several people. It took three people to get those lanterns up in the old North Church to give the signal. And Revere, Dawes, and several others went on their way to go out and pass the word that the regulars were coming. They didn't ride up and down the road yelling, "The British are coming." And that's very important because they didn't think of the British as separate people. They thought of themselves as loyal British citizens.
Yeah, they didn't say the redcoats are coming. They said the British were coming, and they were telling the government to treat them the same as British citizens or subjects as they had been. They weren't being treated like that.
Right. They said the regulars were coming because they all considered themselves to be British citizens. In any case, Revere and the others went about their alarm to pass the word to everyone. And Revere's initial mission was to get to Lexington and pass the word because it was thought that the British were trying to capture John Hancock and John Adams. And that wasn't actually the case. They were going for the guns in Concord, but Revere went to Lexington to pass the word to Hancock and Adams so they could get out because it was thought that they were targeted. They were the only rebels in Massachusetts who had not been offered amnesty.
We'll be right back. Stay there. Quick break, long segment coming up. Lots of time to get into these battles. I want you to take your time breaking down what happened and how this country was founded. Stay with us.
We're on the march. The empire's on the run. Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
How would you like to save up to 90% on your phone bill? It can be done thanks to Empire One Telecom. EOT offers voice over IP technology that will allow you to make phone calls from your home or business without the high cost. Take advantage of EOT's most popular plan, which includes unlimited long distance throughout the U.S. and Canada, and 360 minutes of international calling for only $19.95 a month. Plus, all calling plans include over 40 special features, including call waiting caller ID, and three-way calling free. Take your phone number on the road with you thanks to EOT's travel-friendly box. Simply plug your adapter into any internet connection and start making phone calls. It's that easy. So if you have a high-speed internet connection and are ready to dramatically lower your monthly phone bill, choose your plan now at EOTTech.com. That's EOTTech.com. EOTTech.com.
Terror Storm, a history of government-sponsored terror. Loose Change, Final Cut. Endgame, Blueprint for Global Enslavement. The True Story of the Bilderberg Group. The Late Great USA. America, Freedom to Fascism. These are just a few of the hundreds of powerful documentary films and books available at truthnews.us and prisonplanet.com. When you visit prisonplanet.com, you can connect to our amazing online store. Whether you're looking for survival and wellness products like Berkey water filters, or you would like a book on the history of the Federal Reserve, we've got the most well-researched and documented titles, all available at prisonplanet.com. Or if you'd like, you can give the InfoWars store a call at 888-253-3139. Or you can view more than 1,000 titles in super high quality right now at prisonplanet.tv. Knowledge is power, and the information you need to effectively wake up your fellow man and fight the New World Order is available right now at truthnews.us and prisonplanet.tv. Join the InfoWar today.
The United States is bankrupt, and the bankers want you bankrupt also. How would you like to be debt-free in 90 days guaranteed? DebtCrisisSolutions.com has helped tens of thousands out of debt since 1993 and will free you from the debt trap. DebtCrisisSolutions.com legally guarantees to put an end to wage garnishment, bank levies, and liens, and you won't pay one dime to creditors. With Debt Crisis Solutions program, you'll also restore your credit history and be protected from legal action without making one more payment to creditors. DebtCrisisSolutions.com specializes in credit report restoration, preventing wage garnishment and bank levies, liens, and judgments. Doing nothing doesn't make the debt go away. Become debt-free in 90 days, guaranteed. Call Debt Crisis Solutions now for a free consultation at 718-615-0123. That's 718-615-0123. Or visit them online at DebtCrisisSolutions.com. That's DebtCrisisSolutions.com today.
We need to not just maintain, we need to radically and quickly expand the rifleman culture in this country. Because without that skill, we cannot have a true militia to defend our nation from enemies foreign and domestic. Sam Damewood, to know the present and the future, as you well understand, we need to understand our past. And we are doing that today. So you were continuing with Paul Revere's ride, getting stopped by the British, all the things that happened there, and then what unfolded after that. Please continue and take your time. I want to tell some of those amazing stories.
Okay, Alex. Revere went on his ride, and he was actually stopped and captured by the British on the way, by a British named major by the name of Mitchell. They interrogated him, held a pistol to his head, asked him what was going on, and in a great line of misdirection, he told them that in Lexington he was going to meet 500 men on the parade ground in the town square. And if they hang around in that position, that patrol was dead men. Major Mitchell was pretty hot-headed, and he'd already gotten upset and hurt a couple of people that day over it. He took Revere's horse and turned him loose on foot and headed back to warn the army with an exaggerated version of the perceived danger. Revere went back to Lexington at 4:30. The militia had already been called out and formed and released at least one time at that point. They were hanging around in a place called Buckman's Tavern, which still stands today. The Captain Parker, in charge of the militia in Lexington, had sent out two scouts to find out about the status of the British. And one scout returned and said there was no danger. About the time that Revere got back, another scout returned with news that the British were only 15 minutes from town. He'd found them a little bit earlier, but he got trapped in a road behind them. Captain Parker had the drummers sound assembly to bring the militia back out to the common, the town square, which is a park in the middle of town, where the militia would muster and do their training.
Let's stop right there and then continue in a moment. What type of men made up the militia? We know there were silversmiths and blacksmiths, and we know there were doctors, there were pastors, there were preachers, but predominantly, these, a lot of them were veterans of multiple conflicts, the war with the French, the different wars with different tribes.
Oh, yes. A lot of these men had had military experience during the French and Indian War and had been working along dealing with Indian attacks all along through their entire lives. The American continent was not a quiet and peaceful place for the most part. And that's one of the reasons why they kept up their militia and did their training, because there was always a threat of some kind. There were farmers, doctors, lawyers, insurance salesmen, every occupation that you can think of. Revere was a silversmith. One of the captains of militia was a blacksmith from the town of Acton by the name of Isaac Davis. He was particularly adamant about having his people trained. Besides being a blacksmith, he was a gunsmith, which is a profession dear to my heart. And he had his people trained by firing behind his shop. And he went to considerable personal expense to make sure that his people were outfitted with what was at that time the latest available gear. They all actually had ammunition boxes and bayonets, which most of the militia did not. There were farmers, shopkeepers, doctors, clergymen. Many of the people who were in the alarm band were doctors, because doctors did a lot of traveling in those days, and they knew their way around in the dark. They could find their way from one town to another. Same way with pastors. Given the type of life that they had, a lot of their life centered around the church in those days. And the militia was a very democratic organization. They voted in their officers and NCOs, and they actually consulted before they did anything. They often would consult with their pastor, who was an integral part of the unit. There was one old pastor who took part in the festivities on April 19th, 80 years old, who walked all of them into the ground. He was that adamant to be part of the organization and go out.
And then meanwhile, while all this is going, way to the south in the Carolinas, you have at this time when he's 10 or 11 years old, as it's all about to start, and his mother and brother died in a British concentration camp. They actually invented them. And that, of course, was Andrew Jackson, who wouldn't clean the boots of one of the British officers. So that's the famous scar across his face. So also in this war, a lot of amazing people were developed. But now let's continue back with there's a British force coming, where they are, what happens.
Right. The British force marched on Lexington, and the lead unit was about 250 men out of a total of 800, who was led by a young lieutenant named Jesse Adair. He saw the militia gathered on the green and led his unit off the main road from Concord, taking a fork up to the green to confront the militia before the officers in the rear could stop him. Captain Parker, head of the militia in Lexington, saw this and began his moving his men back. The British unit lined themselves up in a battle formation in front of them and shouted their battle cry, which was so loud that many of their own officers were deafened. Couldn't hear it very well. Captain Parker had approximately 70 men mustered on the green. Two of them were strangers from out of town that were recruited on the spot. "Will you stand with us?" And they did. Parker lined everybody up and told them, "Stand their ground." With a famous, pretty famous quote, "Stand your ground, don't fire unless fired upon. But if they want to have a war, let it begin here." That sounds pretty aggressive, but actually they were still in a very defensive mode. Do not fire unless fired upon. The head British Marine in that contingent, by the name of Pitcairn, rode up on his horse with four other British officers and told them, lay down your arms, you damned rebels. And Parker actually ordered his men to disperse. And they started to back off of the green in pretty good order. Now, somebody fired a shot at that point.
And a lot of evidence shows it's the British. Plus, these are battle-hardened troops from wars all over the world. They're there. They see people getting ready to back off. And so they go, okay, let's go ahead and take a shot.
Right. Well, it was in pretty good agreement from all the statements afterward that not one of the regulars, the British regulars in the formation, fired a shot to begin with. And none of the militia people fired a shot. But there was Major Pitcairn and four British officers on horseback at the head of the formation. And one of them was a Lieutenant William Sutherland, who was well known as a hothead and had been speaking rather harshly of colonists all day long. And it's thought that he's the one that actually fired the first shot from his pistol. Most of the people agreed that it sounded like the first shot came from a pistol and did not come from the British line. But after that first shot was fired, the British regulars began to fire. The militiamen were pretty much amazed. They hadn't planned on being fired on at this point. They were dispersing, retreating off the green. The regulars opened fire without orders, and the officers couldn't control them. They tried everything they could, but it didn't happen. The young guys ran away. Several of the older ones were determined to fight back. And one of them, Jonas Parker, said he would never run. And he was shot down on the spot. And while he was trying to reload his rifle, he was bayoneted. Another one that was killed was Ebenezer Monroe, who thought there was no chance to escape, so he might as well fire back. Only two of the militiamen fell dead on the line where they were mustered. That was Jonas Parker and Robert Monroe. The rest were killed while following the order to disperse. Jonathan Harrington, who was probably the father of the Pfeiffer, fell with a gaping chest wound only yards from his home and died on his own doorstep while his wife and son watched. Seven militiamen were killed and nine were wounded. A prisoner who the British had captured earlier was also killed. Reportedly, he was told he could leave. Then he was shot in the back as he ran away. Only one regular was wounded.
Now, let's be clear. The regulars have been beating people up and interrogating and torturing people on their way. That was ongoing, so they weren't a friendly lot.
Well, they weren't friendly. They didn't go out of their way to hunt people down and molest them along the way, but they had regular patrols out there to stop the alarm word from getting through. And they had been stopping citizens and threatening and interrogating them all the time during the march, all evening long, because just about everybody on the road at that time was one of the messengers. They had taken a good swipe with a sword at one fellow earlier on in the day. And the alarm list had done their job. The organization was getting the word out. There were alarm guns, which were gunshots fired in a pattern to signal people, and church bells ringing all over Middlesex. That entire area of Massachusetts was alarmed and told what was going on. And the British had been trying to control that information flow all through the night as they marched on their way. At about, with only one regular wounded, it was kind of surprising because the various militias shot pretty well. So it's pretty convincing who fired that first shot, and then it was a Britishman. No way to get around that. Like I say, they think it was Lieutenant Sutherland. He was called into General Gage later to explain his actions of that day. It was never admitted that he fired the first shot, but he's the biggest suspect.
Okay, continuing with what unfolded that day and the next few days and then what it led to and some of the interesting characters, heroes of the fights.
Okay. Well, you have to remember, these are common people who are out, they're out just doing their day-to-day job, and suddenly they're warned by the alarm guns and bells that that the regulars are coming out, obviously not to do them any good. You know, we had some amazing people in all of this. One of them that like I say, is dear to my heart was Isaac Davis, who's a militia captain from Acton, who had well-trained his troops. And he marched his troops to Concord. And at Concord, he was in the van when the shooting started there at the bridge. And it's interesting to note
by the van, he was in the front.
In the front of the group. He was chosen because his troops were the most well-equipped and well-trained, and it was widely recognized.
And at this time, the British regulars are running around trying to confiscate firearms and cannons and powder and things of that nature. Please continue.
Yes. When the British got into Concord, they went out to a farm that was operated by a militia colonel, Colonel Barrett. And it was heard that all of the guns and cannon had been moved to his farm and stashed there. So the British split their forces, secured the bridges in Concord, and sent a party of men to Colonel Barrett's farm so they could seize the guns, while part of the militia stayed behind in Concord to search through the town. And they spent all morning searching through the town. And finally, Major Pitcairn had to break into the inn in Concord, threatened to shoot the innkeeper because he wouldn't open the door, got in and held him at gunpoint and told him he was going to blow his brains out if he didn't tell him where the guns were. Unfortunately, the innkeeper knew where the guns were, and he led them to three 24-pounder cannon, which the British destroyed. They busted the carriages up and tore the trunnions off. They found a bunch of musket balls that they threw in a pond. They destroyed flour, a bunch of wooden spoons and trenchers, and they cut down the town liberty pole, which was the signpost where people would meet to exchange news and post broadsides, flyers.
The Sons of Liberty meeting place.
Yes. Basically, it was. And they started a fire with all of that wood. And in the process, the fire got away from them and set the town alight. What's most interesting is that the troops stopped their business, the colonists stopped theirs, and they got together for the first time that day and helped each other put out the fire. When the militiamen at the North Bridge, they were a mile away from the North Bridge on a hill, saw the smoke, they were certain that the British were burning the town, and they started to march back toward town when they saw all that smoke from the fires. And they were asked, in typical militia fashion, who wants to go? All of the commanders and troops were consulted, and Captain Isaac Davis said, "I have not a man that is afraid to go." And they lined up and headed toward the bridge, spread out along the hillside in a row of twos, with strict orders not to fire until the British fired first, but then fire as fast as you can. When the British saw them coming, they fell back from the bridge, and they started pulling up the planks on the bridge. One of the militia majors, Major Buttrick, was upset. That was his family land and had been since 1638. He consulted with his men, took time out to have a meeting, and they consented to attack. And two regiments marched down the hill with drums and fifes, marching in formation, militiamen marching in formation. That so shocked the British, it's untellable how much of a shock that was to them. They didn't believe that the militia would come in there in good order. Their officers had been saying all along that the people of Massachusetts were nothing but an armed rabble. Major Pitcairn had said, "I only need to start to draw my sword out of the scabbard and they'll run."
So tell folks what happened.
Well, the British were lined up for what they called a street volley. There were only 8 or 10 abreast, and one row would fire, and then the succeeding row would come up, and they would keep up a continuous fire that way. But they were bunched up with a narrow front. When the militia came down the hill, one of the British troops in a line, nobody knows who, fired, and all the rest of the British began to fire. Isaac Davis was killed in that opening volley with a ball through the heart. When the British fired, they were never taught to aim. There were no sights on a Brown Best musket. And usually they shot high. That's just kind of the way they work.
This was designed for huge armies blasting each other from just 50 yards away.
Right. They fired in formation, and really they considered the bayonet to be the primary weapon. So they would fire the gun and then fix bayonets if it weren't already and do a rush. Well, we aimed, and the British didn't. They shot high, we shot low, and we decimated the British, almost exterminated every officer in that company.
All right, stay there. Stay there. I want to hear more about this for the listeners. The start of the war that led to this republic. And now we have the great-great-great-grandchildren of the British New World Order system bringing in their corporate slave state yet again and attempting to decimate the Second Amendment. We'll stay with it when we get back.
When you're out driving this holiday season, keep in mind you're being watched. Whether you know it or not, red light and speed cameras are everywhere, ready to snap a photo of your license plate. One simple, harmless error could end up costing you over $500, quickly putting an end to your holiday cheer. Fight back with Photo Blocker. Simply spray your plate once, and you're done. Any photos of your license plate will appear overexposed, making them virtually unreadable. See the newscast showing just how Photo Blocker works against traffic cameras. Christmas is here, and the economy is in bad enough shape without spending hundreds of dollars in fees that can be avoided with one simple application of Photo Blocker. Go to SprayYourPlate.com. That's SprayYourPlate.com. Or call 1-800-276-9601. That's 1-800-276-9601. Don't give your money to the state. Spray your plate. And when the cameras flash, you'll save some cash.
A day unlike any other in the long course of American history, a terrorist act of war against this country.
The enemy struck America on September 11th. But who is the enemy?
Bin Laden.
This is his M.O.
We have to look to the Middle East. We have to look to Osama bin Laden.
Fabled Enemies is the first 9/11 film to take a close look at the terrorist ties to intelligence networks inside the United States.
Some U.S. investigators believe that there are Israelis again very much engaged in spying in and on the U.S.
I'm aware that some Israeli citizens have been detained.
Bin Laden's connections to the CIA, the hijacker's ties to the FBI, the Saudi Arabian connection, the Israeli intelligence network, warnings and war games, the shadow government, and much, much more. Fabled Enemies. Get the DVD at Infowars.com or see it in super high quality, along with hundreds of other titles at PrisonPlanet.tv.
Either you are with us or you are with the terrorists.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
What we need are modern committees of correspondence today. The best material to wake people up about the overall system we're living under and what we face.
All those days
are my documentary films available in DVD, VHS, one of other great books and videos we carry by other wonderful authors and researchers and filmmakers at Infowars.com. Makes a great Christmas present. Give them a PrisonPlanet.tv membership. 5+ months free right now at PrisonPlanet.tv. You can also call toll free. Ask about the combo deals. Huge discounts on some of my films as low as $5.95 a piece for 2-hour films. That number is 888-253-3139. 888-253-3139. We got about 35 minutes with our guest, how time flies. We'll have him back on for a part two. some of the incredible things that happened during the war. You know, I can tell these stories too, but not as calmly and as Sam is doing. I mean, so much happened. I mean, what happened at Trenton after all these battles they'd lost? Literally dragging cannons, you know, many miles through the snow from Ticonderoga. I mean, just all the dedication. It was really amazing, and the hardship, and 3-1, 5-1, 10-1, and some of the battles. Just absolutely amazing. Sam, let's accelerate now and start getting into a little bit shorter of the version of what happened. So the British get blasted off the bridge. Most of the officers get killed. The war is on. Continue.
Right. At this point, we're what the Appleseed folks call the second strike, with the initial engagement at the North Bridge. And the British regulars, with all their officers shot to pieces, turned and ran for their lives, headed back for town. And this is a really surprising thing that to many people. But remember I said earlier that a bunch of the British had gone to Barrett's farm to try to find guns. As those British came back across the bridge, they saw one of their wounded men, who was laying on the far side of the bridge. A bystander, after the shooting, had come up and hit him in the head with a hatchet. Nobody knows for sure who did that, but they got the impression that this guy had been scalped. And that word spread through the army and was one of the reasons why the British committed so many atrocities later in the day. But the militia, who were on either side of the bridge, let that unit pass through unharmed. They were still reluctant to initiate a fight with the king's troops. And that unit coming back through from Barrett's farm didn't fire at them, and they let them go. At this point, the militia is still in a highly defensive mode. They're not taking open action against the British. We're at noon on that day now, on the 19th of April, and Colonel Francis Smith, the head of the regulars, is marching his troops out of Concord, heading back to Boston. And as he left, he knows the hills are alive with militia who are coming from many parts. Now, those alarm riders that went out, along with Paul Revere, had alerted the militia all through Middlesex, that area of Massachusetts, and they were all heading for Concord at that time, several thousand of them. And as they lined up around Concord, Colonel Smith saw them, and he was afraid. He knew that he had serious problems going. They were starting to come up with a formidable adversary, something that they had to respect, not just 50, 60, 70, 200 militiamen, but a couple of thousand militiamen. And as they headed on back, they got to a place called Merriam's Corner, which was between Lexington and Concord, a sharp bend in the road. And it was at Merriam's Corner that the militia took their main action of the day, the third try at lighting the match of revolution. And at that point, the British fired from the back of their formation into some of the militia troops.
Stay there. We got to come back. 70-second break. Sam, Dame Wood. Sam, of course, is with and out promoting great folks at the Appleseed Project, appleseedinfo.org.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.